This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. It is 6:06 on this Friday morning, January 31st, 2025. We have just about plumb rot out of January already to start the new year. But it's another beautiful morning to have you here up north, live from Lake Wissota, from wherever you're listening, across the Civic Media Radio Network, whether it's on a local radio station or off the app or a podcast or watching us on social media. We appreciate you starting your day and ending your week right here. I got a question for you. Is it a Roy Kent kind of Friday for you too? Because regular listeners know that the Roy Kent coffee mug has to come out at some point. What's Mr. Mathers have over there filling in for Mr. Bach? Oh, he's got the Civic Media mug. See, now he's still all in full work mode because he's handsome and capable and, you know, a good soldier compared to all the rest of us. Some of us, and again, if you've never watched Ted Lasso, I have to explain that Roy Kent says a lot of naughty words, things you can't say on the radio. And some days you just feel like that, often on Friday. I would never do that on the radio, Luke, so I have my Roy Kent coffee mug to express it for me. How are you?
I'm doing well, Pat. Yeah, it's a good way to express it. I do love the oi, because that's
oi.
That's how I yell. I'll yell at the dogs sometimes when they're like barking too loud or they're just doing something they're not supposed to be doing in the backyard. I channel my inner Roy Kent there and with my
I kind of thought it would catch on with more people, but you realized that to be like Roy Kent, you have to say that very sharply.
Yeah.
So let me back away from the microphone here and go, oi! You know, there's a lot of that in the show, and I thought I'd do that more often, but I realized that sounds mean.
Yeah,
it's funny on the show, but it can sound mean in real life.
Unless you're a coach or you're, you know, trying to corral two crazy Australian shepherds,
yes.
It's not necessarily the best way to communicate. I do like, just like, I laugh randomly when I think about it, but whistle.
And I was just going to say, yeah. This is my favorite Roy Kent impression is actually Greg Bach. But he's going, whistle. And hopefully Greg's having a nice vacation. Did you see he actually sent us a message anyway? He sent us a message with a news tip.
Yeah, yeah, he did last night. I didn't know sent it to you too. I got it. But yes,
I was going to send a message with Roy Kent type language and tell him to go enjoy his vacation. So hopefully he will from this point going forward. So yeah, Greg will be off for a few days here, and the capable, handsome Luke Mathers is filling in. Coming up on the program today, we will have the latest on the tragedy on the Potomac as work continues to recover the bodies of the 67 people lost in a midair crash. This is, of course, an early challenge for the new Transportation Secretary, Sean Duffy. But his boss wasted no time in going full-blown racist in his efforts to inject politics and selfishness into a moment that demanded compassion and patience. But if you'll recall, it was on this program, and not many others, I have to say, where we saw this coming with then-President-elect Trump's announcement that Sean Duffy was going to be the Transportation Secretary. And we'll explain coming up in a bit. We'll also, as usual on Friday mornings, hear from Courier Newsroom senior national correspondent Kiev Akil and political correspondent Isabel Soissons as well. In our second hour, we have our Week in Review panel, former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel, journalist Jennifer Schulze, and Mark Jacob. We will look at the whirlwind of news that accompanied this week's uncertainty over whether a new administration could actually get away with cutting a massive amount of government services for Americans. And here's the bottom line that we're going to discuss. Dealing with this president is going to require work. There's no other way around it. Work to fact check, work to challenge the things that may not be legal, work to maintain stability in the face of it all. But the work works. That's what we learned this week. Dan Schumacher will be along to help us preview sports for the weekend, and meteorologist Brittany Merlot will have the weekend forecast. Along the way, we invite you to join us. Send us a text at 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842, or use the Civic Media app to send us a note that way. And, of course, you can put a comment on YouTube or Facebook. If you're watching the show there, we may put that up on screen as well. Well, after record high temperatures were broken across the state yesterday, we dip a little cooler today, according to Brittany Merlot's Wisconsin forecast. Snow moves in tomorrow and turns to a sloppy, wintry mix on Sunday, with temperatures again soaring well above normal, but then they drop again. So in detail, Brittany's state forecast looks like this. Light rain for the far southern part of the state, but still mild. Everywhere else, partly sunny today and a little cooler, with low 30s in the north, mid-50s in the south, winds out of the northeast at 10 to 15 miles an hour. For tonight, statewide, chilly with a few clouds. Lows tonight up north in the low teens. The south will see low 20s. Saturday into Sunday is that wintry mix of precipitation the farther north you go, and another ride on the temperature roller coaster over the coming days. Brittany will have details coming up in just a bit, but here's the bus stop weather at 6:12 right now. Here on Lake Wissota, it's 26 degrees. Hayward's at 14. Amory, 28. Wausau, 24. La Crosse reporting 29 degrees. Wisconsin Rapids, 27. Green Bay, 24. Madison, 35. Waukesha at 34 degrees right now, and in Racine, it is 38 degrees. So those are the temperatures around the state, although Hayward is such an outlier there that I want to just make sure I double-check that. Nope, it indeed says 14 degrees there. So everybody else in the 20s or 30s as we move along this morning. You can get our daily newsletter put out by Christina Laurie, my Up North News colleague, every weekday morning, by signing up at our website, upnorthnewswi.com. Click subscribe in the banner on top of our homepage. And today's newsletter is all about Luke Mathers, Luke Mathers' hometown of Sun Prairie. Sorry, that's what I meant to say. You see, we've like I said, run out of January. So here comes February, which means here comes February 1st on Saturday, and, well, February 2nd, and Mr. Mathers is just glowing. He's beaming with hometown pride about what that means in Sun Prairie. What's happening in Sunny P this weekend, Luke?
Yeah, we got a lot going on, actually. I'm looking forward to it. There's a whole winter festival, but we got Groundhog's Day coming up.
Yep, and that brings us to the one and only Jimmy.
Jimmy.
You're supposed to beam with pride and shout out his name, but there's a story behind it, and I'm gonna do spoiler alert because, again, if you're not, you know, already subscribing to the newsletter, you're not getting today's, and so I'm going to go ahead and tell the story as Christina puts it in this morning's newsletter. And this way, Luke can fact-check it as well, being a good citizen of Sunny P like he is. But according to this morning's newsletter, Sun Prairie's groundhog tradition dates back to 1948 when Wisconsin was celebrating its centennial. There was a commercial artist out of Eau Claire, Ira Bennett, who created a series of commemorative postcards relating various Wisconsin cities to holidays throughout the year. So they included Independence in Trempealeau County for July 4th, Port Washington for Washington's birthday. She picked Loyal for Boy Scout Day. Mr. Mathers, again, beaming with pride, the Eagle Scout that he is. And since the groundhog sees his shadow when the sun comes up on the prairie, Ira Bennett chose Sun Prairie to associate with February 2nd. The community kind of liked that, and it stuck, and they came up with this rodent named Jimmy, and he's been a weather prognosticator ever since. And Luke?
I learned something new here right now on the program about my current... See, this is where I was going to push back a little bit. Not my hometown, because not where I'm from, but my current residence.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's your hometown?
Hometown's Franklin, Wisconsin. So in Milwaukee County. Mm-hmm. As so, Pat's trying to talk through the Roy Kent mug.
just thinking, okay, how do I say, okay, you're from suburbia? That's fine. It's, you know, I'm sure Franklin's a lovely place.
Sun Prairie's suburbia Dallas. Now too.
yeah, I lived in West Dallas. You know, and again, people are like, oh, so you live in Milwaukee, right? Yeah. Well, no, yes and no. I mean, I worked in West Bend. West Bend had its own radio station. I worked at the West Bend radio station. A lot of people in West Bend didn't know West Bend had a radio station. Because you're right there with Milwaukee. You're going to listen to all of that. But I'm sure you can come up with some kind of a holiday tie-in for Franklin.
I'm sure there's something there. Ben Franklin.
I mean, do they have their own
Independence
Groundhog?
Day you can do? I don't know. Can you tell us again, though, why? Like, what is it about Groundhog's Day in Sun Prairie?
It's when the groundhog sees his shadow up on the prairie. So we chose Sun Prairie because I don't know of any other prairies that are in Wisconsin. I know Eden Prairie in Minnesota. Are there other prairies? There's Pleasant Prairie. There we go. There's that one.
I don't know anywhere else with sun.
See when you that's true. That one, Sonny and Cheryl just have to get it done for us. Coming up, it's a busy day on Civic Media for Matinair on Air with Greg Bach away. Dan Schaefer will be Jane Matinair's guest host. And at 10:30, they'll be talking to John Dietrich, investigative reporter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And then, Luke, apparently one of your coworkers down there, Terry Barr, is one hardworking woman, because on the Maggie Dawn show at 3:30 is a segment called Good Local But Overlooked with Terry Barr, sharing a story behind why the new film Green and Gold was shot in Wisconsin and how music is playing an important character in the film. And then tonight on Nightlight with Pete Schwabe, coming up at 7:30, Max Enck radio host Terry Barr and Barr Band Friday meet new Wisconsin bands and hear some great Wisconsin-made music. My goodness, we finally found somebody over at Civic Media that works harder than you do. I didn't think that was possible.
I say, a lot of people are working for the weekend, but Terry is working this weekend. So heading into this Friday, and she does an excellent job with the folks at Max Inc. So she'll be on the airwaves from 6 until midnight tomorrow night as well, Saturday night, with the Max Inc. team. So Terry is a hardworking individual every Friday and Saturday.
Absolutely.
Every day of the week, really.
Oh, yeah, and we appreciate it very much. Tony chiming in on YouTube about Hayward, saying that the Hayward folks are almost always outliers. He was chiding me yesterday for not including the Ashland temperature. And as you can tell, Tony, I haven't fixed that yet. But knowing we have such a dedicated listener up there, I may have to add that to the roll call of 6 a.m. temperatures. But let's pause here, and when we come back, we'll, again, talk a bit about the airline mid-air collision with a helicopter in Washington, D.C., Donald Trump's remarks, the tie-in to Sean Duffy's nomination. Also, we'll talk a bit about the court challenge to Act 10, especially now with a Supreme Court that's controlled by progressives. But what about the one progressive justice and the one conservative justice who actually have some professional ties to Act 10 when it was first passed? We'll discuss that as well. Wherever you're listening across Wisconsin on this beautiful Friday morning, when you're here, you're up north. We're live from Lake Wasota on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Pat Wrightlaw.
You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Sleepless hours and dreamless nights and faraways.
Ooh, wishing you were.
Terry Kath, one of the co-founders of Chicago, was born this day in 1946. That's part of today's history lesson. Coming up a half hour from now on Up North News Radio on this Friday morning, final day of January 2025. Nice to have you here. I'm Pat Kreitlow. And at just about 6:22, we can tell you that the recovery effort continues in the Potomac River after the mid-air crash on Wednesday night that involved a regional jet and a Black Hawk helicopter. There were 64 people aboard the plane, three people, members of the service, in the helicopter, and nobody survived the crash, and roughly 40-some bodies have been recovered to this point. And there's been, of course, with any kind of an incident like this, a lot of speculation that's out there. There's video. There is ample reason why people will talk about what may have happened. But the whole point of doing an investigation is to look for everything from mechanical failings to human errors to things that one could just not foresee. And that will take a little bit of time to do. There's also a grieving process involved. On board the jet were many figure skaters and coaches and parents who were coming back from the U.S. Championships in Wichita last weekend and a figure skating camp. You may have seen Nancy Kerrigan, who's a member of the Boston Figure Skating Club, where some of the victims were from, tearfully talking about how much those people meant to her and how the community will have to come together. Because, as she said, the only thing we're taught is when you get down, you have to get back up, and you're going to fall down again, and it's going to hurt, but you have to get back up. And that's what they're trying to do. Certainly the same goes for the loved ones of the three service members aboard, and especially the pilot of that helicopter, because that person, he or she, flying that chopper, made a decision to join the armed services, made a decision to serve their country, could not possibly have imagined that their commander-in-chief, the President of the United States, would spend the minutes and hours afterwards single-handedly determining that that pilot was responsible for the crash, and then, along with opining on other matters that may or may not have caused the crash, goes into one that can only be accurately described as a full-blown racist rant. It wasn't enough that this president took time, rather than comforting a nation, calling for patience and healing. It wasn't enough that he had to somehow find a way to blame Pete Buttigieg, the previous transportation secretary. I mean, hello, where's Harry Truman when you need him? Pete Buttigieg isn't transportation secretary, okay? You're the president. Sean Duffy's your transportation secretary. And it's not to say that it's your guys' fault either, but there's no time for speculating what may have happened in the other administration if you don't know what you're talking about. And unfortunately for this president, not only did he find the time to criticize Pete Buttigieg, but he then went on to say that it was DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, that led to the crash. That he said the FAA had allowed air traffic controllers to be hired, you know, because of DEI, who may not have been qualified. Now, as far as we know, the air traffic controllers may have all been white men. The pilot may have been white men. Everybody involved may have been. He doesn't know. He doesn't have any special inside information that an unqualified woman was to blame, or an unqualified, you know, black man was to blame, or anything like that. He has no basis whatsoever to do this shtick that he always does about DEI, and that doing anything that is supportive of previously underrepresented minorities somehow now is racism against whites. We hear that we used to hear it and laugh at it. Now it's standard government policy. And it comes out of the mouth of the President of the United States, and rightly, folks jumped on it right away and condemned it. The Congressional Black Caucus said, "The opportunity to fully focus our sympathies on those who are in mourning and who may not have even retrieved their dearly departed was marred by a truly disgusting and disgraceful display of racist political prognostication." And it's not just the Congressional Black Caucus. There were Republican members of Congress that said, you know, this is not the time or the place. When asked of Republican Senator Shelley Moore Capito of West Virginia, she said, "Why would DEI be blamed? It's obviously human error, and it's horrifying." Well, it's nice that she criticized the president, a fellow Republican, but I have to say, even she doesn't, we don't know yet that it's human error. You know, they were wearing night vision goggles as part of this training mission. There may have been a malfunction there. It's just all too soon to say, and in our quest for instant gratification, and our quest for instant knowledge, we will go to instant assessing of blame. Even with the person or the thing that you're blaming may have had nothing to do with it. which is something we've definitely seen from this president before. But it's just, even though we've listened to this guy for a decade now, it is still just no less a national gut punch to think that we are led by somebody that 77 million Americans looked at, and not all white, by the way, and said, I'm okay with this guy. But it then means that every time he opens his mouth and says garbage like this, some people will just shrug and go, oh, what do you want to do? I mean, at least he's going to lower my taxes. And the rest of us with a little different setting on our moral compass, which is not to say it's perfect, but it's definitely better than just being concerned about whether your taxes are cut or not, are looking at this guy and saying, okay, this is what's representing us for the next 4 years in this country. We have had discussions off air and on air about not being the Trump grievance network. He makes it very difficult because it's no less important. It's important not to be in full-blown complaint mode, but if we were to just turn our back when he says things this wildly out of line, then we do ourselves no favors as a nation or as a people. You know, we have to wake up with ourselves in the morning. And I'd rather wake up with myself calling out a president for racist remarks than to just take it on the chin. We'll talk to Kia Vakil and Isabel Soisson next year up north.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
We are back now on this Friday morning and I'm going to be visiting with two of my colleagues from Courier Newsroom. You, of course, are familiar with senior political correspondent Kia Vakil out in Los Angeles. Hello, Kia.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning, and Isabel Soisson is joining us from, are you in Philly?
I am.
All right. And Kia, are you jealous?
I'm a little jealous. It looks like a fun vibe after the Eagles advanced to the Super Bowl. So, you know, no other city quite does it like Philly, so I am a little jealous.
That's definitely one way to put it. So anyway, are you going to be insufferable for the next week and a half or so till the Super Bowl?
Yeah, probably.
Isabel probably will be, yes.
I'm not the worst, but
I have, unfortunately, living across the country, I think I've said this before, Pat, like I still root for them, but I'm no longer like a diehard fan like I was for the first half of like growing up. But yeah. I will certainly root for them, especially against the Chiefs.
Yes.
Yeah, nobody wants the Chiefs to win. It's like the Yankees.
There you go. And who'd have thought we'd say that ever about the Kansas City football team? And yet, here we are, the difference a good quarterback can make. All right, well, let's cover some of the headlines of the week. And, of course, we have to start with the terrible crash in Washington, D.C. Obviously, still under investigation. And again, still under investigation. These things take time. And it's no time to be shooting from the lip. And yet, that, Kia, is what we have in a president of the United States who was assessing blame on social media while the bodies were still in the water.
Yeah, I mean, he held or he spoke at a press conference at the White House and, you know, pretty blatantly was just like blaming DEI for the plane crash and diversity hiring initiatives, suggesting that that's what caused the crash. Which is obviously total nonsense, but, you know, is very consistent for someone who has never taken responsibility or shown an ounce of leadership in any situation. This is the guy who, you know, refused to take any leadership of the pandemic in 2020. And he was blaming DEI. He blamed Obama. He blamed Biden. He blamed Pete Buttigieg. Again, we don't fully know what happened yet. It's pretty early still, and these investigations take time. But I feel pretty confident saying that some obscure DEI initiative is not the reason that this tragedy happened.
Well, and we saw this, of course, after the tragedy in New Orleans, where, again, without any hesitation, blaming open borders and immigrants, and it turned out to be a U.S. citizen and a veteran responsible for that in New Orleans. This whole thing has caused us to think about the way that our tax dollars are being put to work every day. Things like, I don't know, feed kids or cure diseases or all the things that we've talked about this week, Isabel. And so can you tell us a bit more about your impressions of what our various state reporters and elected officials were saying, you know, in the early hours of the Trump threat to cut all kinds of federal spending?
Yeah, so earlier this week, the White House Budget Office ordered a pause to all grants and loans dispersed by the federal government, and it's already been walked back. The White House Budget Office said literally just yesterday that they're rescinding the order after basically 48 hours of chaos and people saying, how is this going to work? How is any of this going to work? But it's typical of like what Kia just said. You know, he likes to cause confusion. He likes to obscure the truth and throw what's out there. And it's true. I mean, it would have caused people to, kids not to be fed and people not to get the health care that they need, you know? And I mean, it's very typical of like the RFK confirmation hearing yesterday. I mean, they're telling us that they don't believe that these things are a human right. And I think we should listen to them.
Kia, your own impressions too of what we saw, because again, there was a lot of uncertainty in those early hours. But again, I think cooler heads in a lot of newsrooms prevailed in moving from panic to here's what this would actually mean. Here's what is actually happening.
Yeah. I mean, I think what you saw on, I guess it would have been Tuesday, they issued the memo Monday, late Monday. Tuesday was when it really like you saw the entire, every reporter I saw was like trying to figure out what it meant and trying to explain what it meant. And that was honestly really heartening and impressive to see reporters, not that they don't do their jobs otherwise, but like that was a feat of reporting. That, you know, the New York Times put together a list of 2,600 items based on the memo, on addition to the memo, that would have been affected. Everything from Medicaid to Head Start to SNAP to, you know, Department of Justice programs. And that's because this two-page memo was so vague and so confusing. I've read it four or five times now. I couldn't tell you what they were trying to do with it other than targeting, you know, DEI and transgender rights and climate programs. But yeah, we saw reporters figure out what could be affected. We saw the Medicaid portal shut down in a bunch of states. This is what happens when you have people who don't know what they're doing, and who are both like malicious and incompetent. You know, it's sometimes one or the other, but in this case, it's both.
So maybe I'm being glass half full on this. It was obviously an unnecessary crisis, Isabel. Far too many people got worked up. But yet, because of the fact that media outlets shared all of the many ways, 2,000 plus ways, you know, that government functions for all of us on an everyday basis, this was, I would contend, almost a weird exercise in civic engagement, or at least in civics, of letting people know, you know, just what all happens with your tax dollar every day in this country. And I wonder if you had that impression on that, or just thought about, you know, which of these services people really became more aware of as they were threatened by Trump.
Yeah, I mean, I know several people personally who are on SNAP, and I know people who are on WIC. And it's one of those things that because it was so vague, it engages everybody. People have no idea who this applied to, what programs were affected, what programs didn't. And like Kia said, reporters were trying to make sense of it all. And some people were saying this will affect student loans. But then the White House was like, no, it won't. And it's not that they weren't getting that right. It's that the White House didn't know what they were talking about. But yeah, it's one of those things that comes from the Trump White House that they just throw stuff at the wall and see what sticks. I mean, they like to just outrage people to distract from the fact that they're really just trying to enrich the wealthiest people in this country.
And Kia, it's a weird thing for us to say about a presidential spokespeople and whoever the White House new press secretary is or spokesperson, as she was saying things that were, you know, quite obviously not true or not fully accurate. It just feels weird to say that while we do fact check everything that comes out of press briefings like this, it has to be done to a level like never before. Like, it's now a cardinal rule that you should never just parrot what comes out of this White House.
Yeah. And, you know, here's, I think this point will kind of get across. We'll underscore the chaos of it. We had our reporter in Michigan, but he did a video on what was going on Wednesday morning. Then by the time that was ready to go live, they had rescinded the memo. So he had to do another video. And by the time that was ready, Caroline Leavitt, the White House press secretary, put out a statement that seemed to suggest the order wasn't rescinded. So we had to put pause on that second video. And it's just like, you're just constantly chasing what the hell is happening. And what's happening changes every 20 minutes because, you know, just like in the first Trump administration, no one's on the same page internally. Everyone's racing to advance their own agenda because, you know, Trump has, he cares about immigration and tariffs, but, you know, he doesn't care about the nitty gritty of budget memos and policies. And so you kind of just have people wrangling for power and influence. And it sounds like that memo, it didn't actually even go through the White House before it was issued, the initial one that caused all the chaos. And so, you know, it's just organized incompetence.
So what, Isabel, if anything, can we say about anything tangible that has happened with this administration so far, other than a whole lot of immigrants, mostly undocumented, but not entirely undocumented, these mass arrests, that's something you can see that something was actually done, however ham-handedly. Is there anything else when you're talking about the tariffs and the birthright citizenship and everything else that you say, okay, these are the things that have happened, or is a lot of it just talk and worry and chaos?
I mean, I think it's the latter. I truly, in my opinion, couldn't name anything that he's actually done to help anybody, whether that be his base or otherwise. I mean, all he's really doing is just causing up chaos with all his executive orders, you know, whether that be birthright citizenship or all these tariffs that he's promised. He likes to just declare things and see what happens.
Well, that's the thing, is that tariffs were the one thing that he said he was going to wield, you know, like a club, and only he individually could do this. We've heard him threaten it with so many countries and make so many announcements. I honestly couldn't tell you right now which ones are real, which ones have taken effect, or which ones are about to take effect. It's going to take.
Me either.
And I don't know, Kia. I don't recall seeing a list anywhere saying these things have happened, and we don't know yet, because again, they're just flooding the zone with announcements. Is really what we're dealing with here from them.
Yeah, and it's, you know, he mentioned, I don't know if it was February 1st or just early February, I can't quite recall, that he'd have tariffs on like Mexico and Canada. We'll see what happens. His Treasury Secretary wants to do 2.5% tariffs instead of 25. You know, at which point, what's the point? But, you know, we will. Trump's whole thing is he wants to be seen as doing something. He doesn't actually want to put in the effort to do things, you know. And so, and also, frankly, like, he can't do everything he's promised. You know, the same way, you know, unfortunately, when Joe Biden ran, he promised to restore normalcy and kind of move on from Trump. I think that was naive, as we've clearly seen. And I don't think that was a realistic promise. I don't think any of Trump's promises are realistic. He's not going to, I mean, deport 10-20 million people. He's not going to be able to completely rebalance trade. He's not going to do a lot of the, I mean, those are the main things he's promised, honestly. He's going to give a tax cut to rich people because that is the one thing the whole party cares about. But he wants to be seen as doing things. And so, you know, sending along Fox News cameras and, you know, publicizing every instance of a raid or of a deportation flight, that's what that's meant to do. And so talking tough to Denmark and Greenland and Canada and Mexico, all of whom are our allies, by the way, is just meant to showcase strength, because he can't actually solve the problems in Gaza or in Ukraine or in America. And so, you know, we just have to be careful to take with a huge grain of salt, a boulder of salt, anything he says, because it's all, frankly, just posturing.
Yeah, I mean, it's all about his own ego. It's his own insecurities.
Let's wrap things up then on a couple of stories that Isabel's been working on about states losing population where there are abortion bans or near abortion bans. And let's start with the other one, the more recent one you've just done, on the rise in sterilizations across the country and why that is.
Yeah, there was a study that was published in the medical journal Health Affairs earlier this month that found that vasectomies have surged by 95% and tubal sterilizations have increased by 70% among adults ages 19 to 26. And that happened between May and August 2022. So in the wake of the Roe v. Wade being overturned by the Supreme Court. In order to determine this, they analyzed research from the IQVIA, which is a clinical research service, and they split states into two categories, those that they thought were likely to enact abortion restrictions and those that they thought were unlikely to enact restrictions. And they determined that, you know, young adults in particular are particularly sensitive to major changes like the Dobbs decision, which makes sense. I mean, those are your most fertile years of your life, you know, evolutionarily. Mm-hmm. And also Planned Parenthood has seen a dramatic increase in interest in tubal ligations as well. For example, the Planned Parenthood of Northern New England saw a 386% increase in consultations for vasectomies following Trump's reelection in November. So that's just been in the last few weeks. So I think it's, you know, as we're talking about, he just throws stuff at the wall and wants it to stick. And so people are naturally, I mean, people might see this as dramatic, but everything that's happening is dramatic. So people are responding dramatically.
Yes, they are. And in some cases, with their feet or with moving vans, you know, leaving yes. states. And it's only going to hurt things like the future workforce, and not even the distant future, the near term workforce, if young adults are leaving states like mm-hmm. Wisconsin and elsewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. In particular, they said that this kind of stuff increases. Exactly. Go on, Pat.
No, you're right. So to learn more about this, Isabel's got an article that you can find at upnorthnewswi.com. Also an article about the increase in sterilizations too. And Isabel and Kia, thank you so much for joining us. We hope you have a great start to the weekend.
You too.
And let me get in that plug for the newsletter, upnorthnewswi.com. Click subscribe in the top banner. Subscribe to the newsletter. Make me look good. We'll be back. You're up north.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Late Terry Kaff, one of the co-founders and guitarist for Chicago with Make Me Smile, born this day in 1946 and gone far too soon, passing away in 1978. This is today's history lesson for this January 31st. A couple of birthdays, Mr. Mathers, one of which we referenced just yesterday. Top 10 Packers of all time. And number one on the list, I don't know how many people would still guess that, but Sports Illustrated says it's Don Hudson. And he was born this day in 1913. So I'm glad his name is on the Don Hudson Center there, the practice facility. It's mm-hmm. You always worry that, there's always the, you know, everybody's going to know Vince Lombardi forever. But somebody like a Don Hudson might have been, shut
up. I'm just kidding.
So Don Hudson getting the recognition that he deserves for being one of the greatest Packers of all time, born this day, 1913, passed away in 1997. Baseball legend Jackie Robinson was born this day in 1919, passing away in 1972. The number one song this day in 1970 was the debut single from a new group called the Jackson 5. Now, while Michael sings in the background, keep this in mind about how now there's like little niche radio stations for just about everything. You know how we always like to say back in my day, there were only like three TV stations, and so you had to watch whatever was on? Well, the same could kind of be said for radio. It was like, okay, what was on the singles chart was all over the place. So in 1970, on this day, that was the number one song. Here's a Led Zeppelin song at number four, the highest it would peak, because of the Jackson 5. You need cool air. Baby, I'm not fooling. I'm gonna sit, yeah. So Whole Lotta Love was released as a single. Other songs like Stairway to Heaven never were released as singles, but Whole Lotta Love got up to number four. And it is one of the things I kind of miss about old time, you know, AM rock and roll radio was the whiplash. You know, one moment it's Jackson 5 and then it's Led Zeppelin over here. Like, what? What did I just hear? But you get a little bit of everything. Let's fast forward to 1976. The number one song was by the Ohio Players. This has just got... We've been like in a funkadelic mood this week, haven't we, with our song selections. Actress Kerry Washington is 48 years old today. Singer Justin Timberlake, he is 44 today. I got that sunshine in my pocket. Got that good soul in my feet. I feel that hot blood in my body when it drops. On this day in 2010, big night at the Grammys for Taylor Swift and Beyoncé. Beyoncé won 6 out of the 10 awards she was nominated for, including this Song of the Year. Which has now been ruined again by watching that Saturday Night Live special the other night about the music over the past 50 years. And they run the skit again of Beyonce singing this song in the video, but her background dancers are Justin Timberlake and Bobby Moynihan. And
why does it ruin it for you? It's comedy gold.
It is comedy gold. There's no doubt. Anyway, that was Song of the Year at the Grammys back in 2010. And Taylor Swift's Fearless was Album of the Year, the youngest person to win that award at age 19. Let's talk about Wisconsin history. The Milwaukee Bridge War formally ended on this day in 1846. Because before there was a Milwaukee, there were just all these small settlements in the area. One was called Juneau Town and one was called Kilbourne Town. And there was one or two others there. And with each of them would build their own bridges across rivers, like the Milwaukee River there. And there got to be some real fights about who was allowed on what bridge. And it got to the point that there was a little bit of vandalism and violence. And finally, negotiations came together to bring those communities together and call it something new. So the end of the bridge war gave us the city of Milwaukee on this day in 1846. This is National Hot Chocolate Day. This is International Zebra Day. This is Brandy Alexander Day. Now, have you ordered a Brandy Alexander at the end of your dinner at like a supper club or something like that?
Oh, yeah, just only at the end of dinner.
Yes.
Only then.
Here's the thing that I learned in researching this. We associate it with what kind of a drink would you call it? It's an ice cream drink,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, like a grasshopper and all that. Did not know the
dessert cocktail.
Yeah, it is. Although originally, a Brandy Alexander is cognac, creme de coco or creme de cacao, and heavy cream, and you shake that. Leave it to Wisconsin to go heavy cream and shake it. Hold my mixer. Let's put a half a gallon of ice cream in this thing and then some brandy and the other stuff and make a bridge. So it was not originally an ice cream drink.
And I can tell you the blender works this morning still.
Oh, good. Very good. Yes. I wondered. I saw a little dollop of whipped cream on top of that there. And finally, Richard Drew of the 3M company was working on a different product at 3M back in 1928 when he saw that there was the need to separate paint more easily if you were painting like a two-tone car. And so he designed an easy-to-peel, glue-backed masking tape that eventually had a clear cellophane backing, and the result was Scotch tape, first marketed on this date in 1928. We have our regular Week in Review panel with former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel, journalist Mark Jacob, and Jennifer Schulze coming up next here on Up North News Radio. Get our newsletter at upnorthnewswi.com. Follow us on social media. Search for Up North News WI. Take a break here for news and back in just a bit. I'm Pat Kreitlow. You're up north.
The national news cycle never stops. but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.